The civil war in Sudan has been raging for 2.5 years now and has generated arguably the biggest humanitarian crisis on the planet. Often called the Forgotten War, the conflict has torn apart the Northeast African country of 50 million people, leaving around 12 million displaced from their homes and often with very little access to food, clean water and medicine. I'm speaking to Rina Galani, who's in Sudan at the moment and is the CEO of Plan International, which is one of the humanitarian organizations seeking to make a difference on the ground. So Rina, for those who haven't been following the situation in Sudan too closely with everything else in the world going on, could you give us a sense of the humanitarian crisis at the moment regarding food availability, disease risk, and the active and ongoing danger of violence?
Look, Sudan is now in its third year of war. So it's been going on a while and people are barely able to survive at the moment. There's sort of four main areas in the humanitarian situation. People are fleeing for safety, so they're displaced within the country. There's about 12 million people altogether, 10 million displaced in the country. That's about double the size of Melbourne, and I'm a Melbourne girl, so I always think in proportions in Australia. There's people starving. There is actually people facing a famine. And many more will dive into that situation if we don't get food to them urgently. The second feature of this crisis is that the war is being played out in extreme violence against children and girls in particular. There's a lot of sexual violence to the point where people are saying it's a weapon of war. And then lastly, you know, there's a lot of disease, as you mentioned, Sam. Cholera at the moment at a scale that Sudan hasn't seen. 100,000 people facing cholera and thousands dying from it.
And I understand Plan International has projects all over Sudan, essentially. What are some of the key humanitarian projects that you're undertaking at the moment and what forms are they taking?
Plan International is working, as you mentioned, throughout the country. We're working in places where people are stuck by conflict and therefore trying to get life-saving aid into those areas. We're also working in areas where people have fled to safety, whether that's inside Sudan or in the countries where they're now refugees. And that aid includes, as I mentioned, life-saving aid, water, sanitation, food, all the basic things you need to live. It also includes things that make you human, you know, the issues around dignity, education for children, safety for children, safe spaces, as well as support to the girls and women who faced sexual violence, psychosocial support, for example. And we're able to deliver our emergency work, plans emergency work, actually shows that when aid gets in, it can be the difference between life and death.
In some of the places you're talking about, you know, they're active combat zones or in the peripheries of combat zones, places like North Darfur, North and South Kordofan, Khartoum as well. What are some of the risks that your organization has had to manage working there?
So those are very volatile areas. We actually had a colleague of ours killed last week in North Darfur. So it's highly risky. And in fact, 158 workers plus have lost their lives in the Sudan war. We have offices that have been looted and hit by military action, and El Fasher was one. Luckily, we got our colleagues out just before, but as I said, another colleague was killed only 30 kilometres from El Fasher. So it is highly risky, and we actually need all of the warring soldiers and armies and military to actually protect aid workers and let them pass through safely. It's very complex. Working in a war zone means you have to negotiate with all sorts of actors. We're facing problems with that, bureaucratic hurdles, as well as, I mentioned, the active conflict being a security risk.
You talked a little bit about some of the obstacles there, but what are some of the other barriers that you've found to providing adequate food and medicine to the starving and suffering people in Sudan at the moment?
So there's sort of three main barriers, I would say. The first is the fact that it's a war zone, and so we have to navigate negotiating with all of the different actors to get through. The second is that all of the actors, all of the armies, the paramilitary are putting bureaucratic hurdles on our operations, and we need those to reduce. We have to stop having processes and steps and hurdles put in place. And lastly, it's funding. The Sudan war is often not on the front pages, as you mentioned, Sam, and yet it's one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world today. And funding is an issue. We're appealing for more aid, of course.
Is there any particular story of a displaced person in Sudan that you've encountered who's really been helped out by these humanitarian efforts?
I met a woman yesterday, actually. Her name is Salma, and she is from Khartoum, and the capital of Sudan. And when the war started 3 years ago in April 2023, the bombing started literally without any warning. She grabbed her three children, her husband was at work, and just ran. And they were facing all sorts of problems and were displaced four or five times before they arrived where I am today, which is in the eastern part of Sudan, a place called Kassala, where it is currently safe. And we have aid workers, PLAN, international aid workers, providing assistance. Took her 3 months to get here, but when she did, she's now actually able to support her own family. We provided a bit of support where she started selling vegetables and things herself. She's living in safety, and she's now contributing by being a social worker, in a way, to others who are still fleeing. The children are at school, so it is possible that if we are able to get the funding that we need, we are able to help people like Salma.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you, how can the Australian government or just everyday Australian people help contribute to these humanitarian efforts?
So there's two things that the Australian government and Australian people can do, and the generosity of the Australian people is often well seen when they do come forward. The first is pushing, lobbying, advocating for peace, for a ceasefire so that people can have a bit of respite from the bombs that are dropping. And the second, of course, is a little goes a long way. And so by providing funding, we can actually do a lot. And like I said, our programs show it's the difference between life and death. We have an appeal on Plan Australia's website if people do want to contribute. Every little bit helps.